funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we'll start with the breaking news today, lads, and that is Tyrone have new managers. And I say managers because it is a joint manager's ticket, Fergal Logan and Brian Duer. The Fergal Logan was a manager back in 2015 when they won the All-Ireland under 21, and Duer was a selector. So Duer's after getting a bit of a promotion there, Conan.
Yeah, he must have said, I don't want to be joint manager, or I don't want to be assistant manager anymore. I want to be joint manager.
Yeah, well, no, he doesn't want to be a selector, because selector's job now is just, everybody knows it's bollocks.
Anybody's a selector. Like, if you can be a selector if you want. How many people are in your changing room and you'd be like, who's that lad? Like, you know, you can just walk into a changing room and attach yourself to a team, like, and then suddenly 2 months later you're part of the management team and you're a selector. But the joint management thing is interesting, because somebody is still in charge, essentially. Like, you know, people can work together well, and they can, you know, you can obviously have a good consensus and a good working relationship, but there's still somebody that's going to have the final say, and both people will know that as well. And it might be Logan, I don't know, and like, maybe both don't really care who it is, but somebody is in charge.
Yeah, well, I don't know actually, Conan. I don't know. You mightn't have listened to the hurling show recently, but Cheddar Plunkett has admitted to being voted out in a selectors meeting as manager. He said it happened once and it never happened again. I'll put it to you that way. So, like, you're basically, Connor, you're the manager of the team. Your neck is on the chopping block, and there's three unknown selectors outvoting you. Like, it's preposterous.
Well, that completely undermines the role of manager in the first place, right? I mean, manager is the guy who ultimately has to have the final say. And if I was in Tyrone, I'd be worried about that. Like, Conan says there that, like, both of them know, you know, who's going to be the main man making the decision. But do they really? Like, I mean, because there's an ample amount of history of, like, joint managers that just haven't worked. Like, in Mayo, we don't have to look too far back the last few years to see that the Holmes and Kennelly ticket didn't work either. There's various reasons around that, apart from joint manager, but that would be one of them. And I can't think of too many roaring successes. I know there's been a few in GA, but I can't think of too many that's been roaring successes as joint manager. Because ultimately, I think, depending on the ego of the two lads in charge, but then, like, players will ultimately recognize one guy as the main guy, and then the other guy has to either reckon with that and be okay with that, or realize that he's better off not in a joint manager ticket at all. And you see managers end up leaving that ticket because they've realized that it hasn't worked. So I'm not doubting the caliber of either manager. I mean, they've obviously got great management potential. They've won an under 21 All-Ireland with Tyrone as recently as 2015. But I just hope that they've thought this through before agreeing to be joint managers, because it's just, history is littered with examples of it not working.
The one I always think of when I think of joint managers not working is Gerard Houllier and Roy Evans, without using a soccer one. And I'll never forget the story Robbie Fowler told at one of the live shows in my previous job. And he was like, Gerard Houllier came in. This is basically, both managers have to be on the same wavelength. And I'm sure Duer and Logan are, like, I mean, they know each other well, they've worked with each other before. But anyways, Gerard Houllier came in and he was a bit of a disciplinarian, and they went on a weekend away. It was actually to Ireland, and all the team were told by Gerard Houllier, you know, down in the lobby, you're not going out tonight. This is a new kind of setup. You know, we're going to try and move it forward in a little bit of a professional kind of era or whatever. And the next minute, Robbie said they're all down, just after Houllier giving him the speech, and the next minute the elevator goes bing, and here's Roy Evans in his glad rags ready to hit the town. Oh, I thought it was a classic. Anyways, Conor, that's the worst case scenario, right?
Worst case scenario, and, like, as Conor said, like, as long as you're on the same wavelength, that's good. But I know we talk about egos, and, like, sometimes that might not suit the other person, but I actually think that somebody with an ego is especially important in a scenario like this, because it ultimately is somebody who has to push through with something to say, look, I know we're both maybe clashing here on this, and that will happen naturally in any management team, whether you're joint or assistant. But, you know, somebody then has to make the final say and say, like, I'm going to live and die by this, and if it doesn't work, then grand, it's on me. But, like, you do need that person to defer to every once in a while. And I think in probably most relationships as well, like as good as people can get along, there is going to be that one person who will back themselves more. And I think that's important.
Yeah, no, it is. Collie Holmes is rumoured to be in on the ticket. Joe McMahon, maybe Ryan McManaman could be in there as well. Who knows? Like, there's a lot of options in Tyrone to go in with the two lads. Like, we didn't get a chance even to talk about Mickey Hart going to Louth. That broke, I think, on Monday after we did the review show. Like, I mean, this is a huge shock. To everybody, Peter Fitzpatrick, the Louth County Board chairman, was talking about this, and I couldn't believe this. So he says, so when Tyrone were beaten in the championship, we contacted Mickey on the Monday. They rang Mickey on the Monday after losing to Donegal, asking to manage Louth. Now, number one, Mickey, in Mickey's head, he wasn't going to be given the bullet from Tyrone. Like, I mean, there's such a cheeky phone call. Now, Mickey, now that we know you're going to get the sack from Tyrone, I would have definitely left that pan out a week. And let's see what happens there, Conan, because I think ringing a man on a Monday after a championship knockout loss is beyond belief.
It's like, yeah, Mickey, I've been chatting to some people in Tyrone. It's not your. so to that end, yeah, like, and you know, like, over the last, was it since 2018 that he's been getting a 1-year rolling contract? So I think he never wanted to step away from Tyrone in the first place, but he was just happy enough to keep working this out. He got to the final in 2018, so that gave him a bit of clout as well. And I think, considering the year that was in it as well, he didn't get a lot of preparation time. He probably thought he would definitely be given another year, but a couple of hours later, somebody from Division 4 Louth is ringing him up and be like, here, I've got a job for you now, for your caliber.
Honestly, Connor, if you weren't depressed enough to lose to Donegal, and not depressed that, you know, your job is under threat, a Division 4 team starts ringing you.
yeah, maybe.
Like, what have I become?
Maybe Peter Fitzpatrick saw which way the wind is blowing and is thinking, listen, Mickey Hart is going to be getting calls left, right and centre this week, so I'm going to go in there first. Whether it's rude or not, I'm going to give him a shout anyway. And maybe Mickey Hart is thinking, well, listen, I can go to the Tyrone County Board now and say, listen, lads, if you don't give me my extension, I already have an offer from Louth. What the Tyrone County Board would have made of that, I don't know. But it did. I did find it very strange. And I found it, I don't know, like, I heard Moshe McConville say that having worked on the BBC with Mickey Hart, and, you know, the week after he left Tyrone, that this guy is going to get back into inter-county management immediately. I was kind of surprised at that. I thought he might wait maybe a year. I didn't think he was gone completely. But yeah, we might get into it. I think it's brilliant for Louth. I didn't see it happening, but I think it's going to definitely work out in their favour.
Yeah, it's like after breaking up from a beautiful looking wife married for 20 years and some ugly one down the road starts contacting you the day after. It's like, that's not going to help. This isn't without precedent anyways, Conan. This happened to Paddy O'Shea, a very similar situation, and it worked out pretty well for Paddy and not very well for me, actually, as it turns out, because his Westmeath beat us in the Leinster final. He had a very similar situation in that he was very hurt in the way that he was treated by the Kerry County Board, left and got an offer from Westmeath, and that worked out pretty well. So, like, it will be interesting to see how Mickey gets on in Louth. He's not going to win a Leinster title. I think that's fairly obvious. So I suppose, what is success for him? Louth have been in Division 2. Colin Kelly got them from Division 4 to Division 2. Like, it's hard to actually see. You know, he will improve them, there's no doubt, because there's lots of players in Louth, and Peter Fitzpatrick touched on that, you know, a lot of players not committing and stuff. But can he actually do better than Colin Kelly? You know, what's success for Mickey in Louth?
This is the really interesting thing about the appointment, because you're talking about Paddy O'Shea, and obviously Westmeath were a really good team back then, 2004, and they went on and won Leinster. Like, it's not like Mickey Hart. You know, like somebody like Pete McGrath, who hadn't been in a job in a while and then took the Fermanagh job, didn't do particularly, he did well 1 year and then it sort of ran its course, and then Louth picked him up, he lasted 10 months. Mickey Hart is coming off the back of 18 years, and, you know, with obviously an amazing record behind him, and only this month, like, we're talking about Fitzpatrick ringing him a day after, like, this month he was in charge of a top 5 county, so... It is a strange one. Like, it really shows his love for football. And, like, I don't know what he's thinking. Like, in terms of Louth, like, I was just looking at the record. Over the last 7 years, there hasn't been a season where they didn't get promoted or relegated. So maybe he's thinking, I can bring a much-needed consistency into this team. If I can get into Division 2 and keep them there, that'll be the first time since 2013, I think it would have been, where they stayed in the one division. Like, and maybe he's just thinking I can get them up to a different level. And also maybe he just didn't want to be competing with Tyrone in Ulster. Like, I was looking at it thinking, for God's sake, Live have Mickey Hart in charge and we have Rory Gallagher. I think Mickey Hart would have been sought after by a lot more counties.
Yeah, well, it'll be in. And I suppose in Mickey's defence, I suppose he's looking at maybe Leinster outside of Dublin, it being a level enough playing field. So maybe a Leinster final, consolidate Division 2. And he's done a good job. Like, I mean, they're building a new stadium and maybe he wants to be part of that. And maybe he's getting very good expenses to drive down as well. It probably has to be said as well. So we'll keep our eye on that. It's a great appointment for the Leinster Championship, you'd have to say, to give it a bit of a boost to have Mickey Hart involved down here. Cavan have confirmed that they're happy to go to Croke Park. So finally, some bloody sense. And they've released this statement. And in my opinion, they needed to release this statement because it's turning into a bit of a joke at this stage. It said, Cavan County Board would like to clarify that they absolutely and categorically have never considered nor have any intention of applying for a venue change for the upcoming All-Ireland semi-final fixture. We're honoured and look forward to playing the All-Ireland semi-final as fixed by the CCC. So this was getting into farcical proportions for me. Now, Les, I don't know what you think of this, but my opinion on this is that, you know, this is an All-Ireland semi-final. And while some very good cases down over the last few years have been made, you know, to take a Leinster semi-final, to take a Leinster quarter-final, you know, to take Dublin out of the Super 8's home game, completely unfair, to take Dublin out of Croke Park for their league games, all of those are very, very worthy campaigns in the interest of fairness. But how is anyone saying it's fair to take an All-Ireland semi-final out of Croke Park? Dublin have as much right to play in Croke Park in an All-Ireland semi-final. Cavan have the same right. It's the national stadium and it's the All-Ireland semi-final. I just couldn't understand this, Conan, where this is coming from. I think Oisín McConville's kicked it off on BBC. And amazingly, Mickey Graham. Now, Mickey Graham must have got carried away after the game. I'd say that's when he probably made the comments. And ill-advised comments now from a manager to be saying something like that.
Yeah, like, you're right. This isn't the game to take issue with. Like, the Laois match in the Leinster semi-final, that was the match to kick up a fuss if you were going to do it, like when it was played at Croke Park. Like, the problem with Dublin playing in Croke Park isn't that the semi-finals and finals are there. It's that, like, as you say, they're playing four league games there. They're playing two or three Leinster games there.
Is the argument.
They're playing two Super 8 games. That's where you attack. And I know now it's annoying that when they're playing in the semi-final, but, like, that wouldn't be an issue if they weren't playing all those other games there. So just now that it seems unfair that they're so used to Croke Park, it's not like a case now of an All-Ireland semi-final that's thrown into Navan. Like, it's an All-Ireland semi-final taking place in December. It has to be Croke Park, whether there's a crowd there or not. And we might get into it, but there might be a crowd there. So obviously you want your bigger stadium to try and increase more of the crowd. So I don't know. Like, this is just seems to be, when it gets into territory then of just because Dublin are so good, it's like, let's try and weaken them at any cost. And the reality is, like, the biggest argument should be next year, get them out of Croke Park for the league. Get them out of Croke Park for the Leinster semi-final. That's a joke. Don't give them two games in Super 8s. When he gets the All-Ireland semi-finals and finals, everyone's back in Croke Park. That would be fine then. It's not this match to take issue with.
No, and my worry, Connor, is that this kind of nonsense cheapens all the other arguments. You'll have, you know, Dublin, you know, the GAA in Croke Park who have to make this decision to CC. Oh, that's just how, like, you know, they'd give out about anything. Whereas the other argument for me is complete unfair, whereas this is feckin' All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah. And it seems to just have taken on a life of its own at the weekend, to the extent that the obvious question to ask the Cavan, I think Thomas Gallagher was before the media this week, the obvious question to ask him on the back of it was, you know, do you want to play Dublin and Croke Park? Whereas he wasn't thinking about that. You know, he didn't want to be thinking about that or didn't want to be distracted by that. And it's become a distraction. And the worst thing then about it is that, like, you know, people were saying, oh, Dublin will just beat them wherever they play them, which they will. But it would have undermined, you know, it would have been said, oh, of course, Dublin, they gave them extra motivation to beat Cavan. And, you know, that wasn't fair on Cavan either. And I'm glad that Cavan came out with that statement to clarify that there was never a request that they made. It was never something that they thought that they were going to do. Like, Conor made the point there, there's bigger fish to fry. Like, I mean, like, there was a stat last week that Dublin have played the 35 games against Laois in the Leinster camp or something, and none of them have been in Laois for the last 35 games. That's the thing to take issue with. The Dublin's advantage in Leinster, Dublin's advantage in the Super 8s and the league in the last few years is the issue to be concentrating on, and not whether to take an All-Ireland semi-final out of Croke Park, where it has always been and where it always should be.
Well, always should be. And Croke Park, obviously, like Conan touched on there, it's the safest. It has the biggest dressing rooms. It has warm-up areas. It has Hawkeye. Like, it's farcical that you think, right, Dublin are too good, so let's bring them somewhere that they're not good enough and make it completely. So you're actually, the solution to actually fixing the unfairness Dublin have in Croke Park is to make it unfair on Dublin. You know what I mean? And unsafe on supporters. It's complete and utter nonsense, and I'm glad that it's gone. And obviously the big advantage to Dublin and Croke Park, one of the huge advantages to Dublin and Croke Park, and it's nothing really anyone can do about it, they're just lucky that they have the biggest population, is they have the majority of the supporters, unless they're playing Mayo or unless it's an All-Ireland final where the tickets will be split 50-50. And they don't have that advantage now. So if anything, Cavan are getting, you know, Dublin in an All-Ireland semi-final in a situation that no team would ever get them in. No crowd. You know what I mean? Almost like a challenge game feel to it. So they should be delighted with it. And, you know, I spoke to Killian Clark yesterday. He's coming up in part two of the show and I asked him about it. So we'll hear what he has to say in part two. James Horan obviously was asked about the same thing during the week. And we know Mayo don't have any fear or worry about playing Dublin in Croke Park, and rightly so. How on earth would one of the top teams ever get it into a player's head that, you know, there's an issue with this? He said, I'm more than happy for our game to go ahead in Croke Park. A lot of players want to play there, but I can completely understand people looking to have a game at neutral venues. But from my side of it, we're more than happy to go ahead at Croker. And I think that's maybe James Horan's experience versus Mickey Graham's experience. You know what, going to Croke Park to play Dublin and what message he needs to send to his players. Lads, I was just thinking of Darren McVitie this week. And like, I mean, I've spent summers in America. I've had to watch Laois play Dublin in a Leinster final from Boston. And Jesus, I was torn up watching it, you know, half wanting them to win and then thinking of myself and how I'll feel if they win and then not wanting them to lose and then feeling a relief when they lost. I was all over the place. Like, an alcohol helped, but I was still all over the place emotionally watching it. And Darren McVitie's gone to Australia and I'm sure he's having a good time over there, but Crossorlough won their first county title since 1972, Conan. And Cavan have won the Ulster title for the first time in 1987, which is an incredible stat considering that Darren McVitie is the best forward on both of those teams.
It's tough. Like, it's really tough for him. And you're right. Like, we've raved about Darren McVitie. I'd say he's won performance of the weekend two or three times on this show. And we already mentioned the players leaving Cavan. Like, this year would be a big blow for them. And he was the main one. But I remember going back to watching this as a club intermediate championship in 2016, and they won a semi-final match and there was a huddle, and I remember just looking from the stands thinking what that huddle is like right now. I know everybody's buzzing, they're all like, you know, let's drive it on for final, let's put in a big 2 weeks. And it was heartbreaking not being part of it. Like, you know, I still wanted them to win, but it was really hard to think that you wouldn't be part of it. You're going to be a bit of an outsider on it. Like, and you're obviously, you were there in 2003 as well with Laois. I don't know, like, I don't know how you deal with it. I can only imagine Darren McVitie maybe coming back next year into the club and county and like trying to be so enthusiastic and motivated, whereas everybody's probably spent and they've done all their celebrations and they're just not as at it anymore. He's like, ah, come on, lads, let's do the same thing. Let's win the Ulster title. But yeah, it's going to be a tough one to try and convince them they all get back up to those levels again. But God love them.
Yeah, no, there's no other thing to say other than God love him. Like, it must be absolutely heartbreaking, because I'm sure, like, Crossorlough won or lost a county final in 2017 or 2018. Obviously, then you have a situation where Cavan were kind of beaten well in Ulster last year. And I'm sure in Darren McVitie's head, Connor, he's thinking, it's better off get away now because, you know, like, I mean, we can't seem to get over the line here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You wouldn't have blamed him. And like, obviously, he wasn't the only one in the Cavan set up to get away. So you wouldn't have blamed him. And he couldn't have imagined that it was going to turn out the way it did. So, yeah, like, listen, he would have been delighted, obviously. But that thing in the back of his head, you know, thinking that, oh, if I had just hung around, I would have been there for the biggest day in my club's history and the biggest day in the county's history for the last 25 years. And, you know, I was actually only thinking of Michael Quinlivan last week as well, that, like, had he left, that, like, commercials, you know, had he left, he would have missed out on commercials winning Tipperary and Tipperary winning Munster. But the difference there is, I was thinking that, like, if Michael Quinlan wasn't around, commercials probably wouldn't have won the Tipperary county final and Tipperary wouldn't have won Munster. But it just shows how easy it could have been. Like, Michael Quinlan could have been in Darren McVitie's shoes, and Darren McVitie's could have been in Michael Quinlan's shoes. So, yeah, you just have to really feel for him.
Yeah, no, you definitely do. Talking about Michael Quinlivan, so we were talking on Monday, Con, and I was getting a little bit carried away about Tipperary continuing to wear those green and white jerseys. Maybe not too carried away without the, you know, Michael Hogan picture and the Bloody Sunday stuff, just put Tenio sponsor. As it turns out, they're not going to do that. I actually thought that they were. It was kind of floated that they were going to do it. And I was like, Jesus, I should have actually kept that. I wish I hadn't backtracked on that notion. But as it turns out, now it would the Tipperary County Board said that the Munster final jersey was a one-off replica for a specific commemorative day that will live long in the memory of Tipperary GAA, and they're going back to their blue and gold this weekend. So, like, I mean, Keane was right, I was wrong, but I still think it might not have been the worst idea.
I don't think so. Like, you convinced me. Keane probably talked both of us off that ledge on Monday, but at the time, like, I think you mentioned the psychological aspect of it as well. Like, the last time they wore those jerseys, they won a Munster title for the first time in 85 years. As you said as well, they used to be the Tip colours, so it's not like it's some outrageous thing that they were doing.
I
wouldn't have seen too big a problem with it. The only thing I would say now is that the decision that they've made is that it probably has just preserved that day and those jerseys in a little special piece of history now that will never be, like, tainted. If they went out and lost by 17 points to Mayo, like, I know, again, you're taking off the commemoration stuff from it, but does it just ruin the jersey a little bit, or does it sour it a little bit, whereas now it's just a memory of beating Cork on the Bloody Sunday weekend? Leave it at that.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, Jesus, those jerseys look fairly class framed in all those lads' houses. If they don't frame those jerseys and leave them in the wardrobe, like, I mean, they're off their head. Like, I mean, it's absolute class. Bloody Sunday commemoration jersey, first Munster title in 85 years, different colours to the county colours. Like, I mean, my God, imagine how much a pub would pay for one of those, Connor.
Yeah, actually, the question after the game, immediately after the game, everyone was asking, were they available on the O'Neill's website? And I don't think they actually were. So I think Tipperary might have missed a trick there. But in terms of...
I'd buy one if they were around. I would definitely buy one.
It was being asked in WhatsApp groups, like loads of WhatsApp groups that I'm in, Woolley, and we're looking at Mayo playing Tipperary in the semi-final. So see how popular it was. But I think I'd be in Keane's camp listening to it Monday, just like... Like, we even talked last Thursday, Woolley, with Ger about, like, kind of tapping into the psychology of, you know, the historic occasion. But, like, and you discussed this on Monday as well, as in, like, how, you know, they had nearly parked it before the game. So, like, if they were looking to use the jerseys as a motivational tool for the semi-finals, I don't think it's going to work. I think it was for that one-off occasion, as Conan said, and that's preserved in history now. So it's just the pity for everybody else is that they're not wearing it again, because it looks so good, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it definitely looks good. The Sydney Swans general manager, Charlie Gardner, was interviewed in the Irish Examiner. And she's just very sensible stuff from Charlie, you'd have to say. And he was talking about Colin O'Riordan obviously getting the permission to play the final. And he said, the risk of injury is something we can have a mature and sensible discussion about. We need to understand that all of our players are more than just football players. A healthy, happy player will perform. These guys are a long way from home. We certainly place a heavy emphasis on understanding all our players and what drives them. For the Irish guys, it's obviously home and what they're missing. We need to understand this now and in the future. Like, I mean, such a beautiful thing for him to say. And, like, Colin O'Riordan will go back out to the Sydney Swans and he will train and he will commit and he will give every ounce of blood, sweat and tears for them, Conan. That is the greatest bit of man management, giving him permission to play that game, that you will ever see. Because it would be easy for them to just go, no, you're a professional athlete, you have a contract, you're worth too much for us. And But no, Charlie Gardner is thinking of it on a different level. I think all managers in all sports in the world should be thinking like this. Stop thinking about myself for a second and think about the player, and you will get it back tenfold.
A hundredfold. Like, you could hear it in his voice after the game on Sunday when he brought it up, and he said he wanted to thank him from the bottom of his heart, and you could hear what you said, that he's going to, like, go back out there and he's going to be Mr. Sydney Swans, like, you know, and he's going to be training harder than ever. He's going to feel a real affinity with the club. It was massive and such a simple thing to do as well, but not everybody does it. Like, he's going to be training and stuff anyway. He might, like, they don't know what he's doing at the other side of the world. He could end up playing five-a-side. I know all that stuff they would encourage people not to do it, but, like, he could get injured doing something. He could get injured running up a mountain, and he's playing in a Munster final that means the world to him. And it's obviously great for him as a person, as an athlete, and just an easy decision for them to say, yeah, go do it. And now they're going to reap the reward from it, and they deserve it. And every time we have a manager on the show as well, I think it started, the first one I remember anyway was Jamie Wall, and you had him on in 2016, and he was talking about just seeing every player as a person and how much stuff they have going on in their lives, and how, like, you know, he wants them to be people, and he wants them to understand that they can come to him with problems, and he's not going to ride them all and just see them all as like weapons that he can do. Like, and all these managers, Liam Cairns, like the people that come on and talk about letting them celebrate, the players give them back more then because of that. And you have to recognize that they're not just, you can't just whip them into shape and hope that you'll have them on board for 3 years. Treat them as people and they'll pay it back to you.
Yeah, treat them as people is right. And like, I mean, find out what's important to them. And if you have to give one a little bit more leeway, almost in private, right, we'll go to that wedding if that's important to you, you know, or some, you know, or whatever that is knowing your players, I suppose, Connor, and knowing what makes them tick. And like I said, if you give them a little bit, you'll get it back.
I couldn't disagree with this more, lads. Colin O'Riordan cannot be allowed to play this All-Ireland semi-final. Once your final is fine, one game was fine, you know, but the risk is too great to Colin O'Riordan if he's going to play in this All-Ireland semi.
Yeah, I'd say you're a little bit worried about that Tip team. Now, I don't think your Mayo are going to be as tactically stupid as... I was actually thinking about that, lads, and I didn't say it on Monday's show. In the last maybe 2 or 3 years since, you know, Dublin dismantled Tyrone and kind of showed teams how to play against those, you know, more, I don't want to call Tipperary a very defensive team, but they'll get, you know, 12 bodies back and they'll hope for counterattacks, and they look great on the counterattack. But like, I mean, the other team that lost out badly to a counterattacking team was Kildare losing out to Carlow in Tullamore. And it was like they were clueless about how to get through that system. And then Leash showed it up in the Leinster semi-final and played, you know, smarter, a bit like Dublin did against Tyrone that day. What's the common denominator between Cork and Kildare that day? Keane O'Neill,
yeah.
Yeah, strange, isn't it? Like, I mean, that for someone who's kind of would have a big reputation as being a coach, they're two shocking tactical performances against defensive. I'm not putting Tipperary in the same category as Carlow in any way, shape, or form, but they were playing with, you know, double sweepers when they could.
Are you saying the occlusion goggles don't work?
Yeah. I wasn't even going to mention that.
Keane O'Neill was getting getting praise in a lot of quarters for, you know, his role in kind of masterminding maybe Cork's victory over Kerry as well. And then a couple of weeks later, it's shown up against in what was a very poor tactical performance against Tip. But you said it there, Willie. I'm worried about, we'll get into it next week. I'm worried about Tip. I think Mayo have struggled against that type of performance at times. I'm particularly worried about how big Tip are and how their ability to win clean ball around the middle. But on O'Riordan, like Conan summed it up really well there, and it, like, I just thought it was his interview in general was brilliant, but how well he spoke of his treatment at the hands of Sydney Swans, I thought was spoke volumes about how much Sydney Swans value him and how much O'Riordan values what Sydney Swans have done for him as well. It was clear how much it meant to him, and these circumstances, like the circumstances this year with him and Mark Keane, I mean, we're probably not going to be playing an All-Ireland Championship at this time of year again. You know, so like for the likes of Collingwood and for Sydney to facilitate it and think how much it means to them, not just as people, not just as athletes, but as people as well, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, he's a strange one, O'Riordan, in that like he doesn't have that blistering pace that you associate with Gaelic footballers going over there, you know, and he's not a monster either. He's a good size, but like, I mean, you know, you associate a Conor McKenna, Zach Toohey, you know, these kind of play wing back over there, Colin Begley, just fellas who have got, you know, pace is a huge, huge asset to them. But Reardon doesn't strike me as one of these blistering type. Like, he's actually a very intelligent Gaelic footballer. I've never really seen him playing the Australian rules, Conan.
It's normally just, yeah, everybody goes out ends up as a wing back, don't they? Out,
yeah.
There? And like, I was surprised because I think on the Thursday show with Connor and Jared, you were speculating that he'll just play number five where he used to play with Tipperary, and you know, just slot him in there. But yeah, he just played such a massive game around the middle for them, just winning up, like just hoovering up like first ball. And it was just a huge game from him. And I can only imagine, again, I haven't seen him play much AFL, but I can imagine that he's just a good player. Like, he just knows what he's doing. He's not another one of these guys who seems to have a bit more time. He's not fazed about people around him or in tight areas. and he seems to just eat up the ground really well as well. He reminds me a bit of Conor Glass from Derry, only a bit ahead of him, and like, you know, obviously having such a bigger impact with Tipperary already.
Yeah, good bit to go. Conor Glass has to go now. On the evidence of the game, I saw Conor Glass. Conor Glass needs to win me over, Colin. That's it. Like, I mean, that's just going to have to happen. I'm not saying he won't. I have been wrong before plenty of times. Come here, James Horan's the latest manager to complain about the full panel not being allowed to go to games. And I think now that on Monday we're maybe be moving back to a level 3, whatever the hell that's going to be. That maybe this might be relaxed a little bit, Conan. He says, not allowing the panel go to games, it's outrageous. I think the players, to a certain extent, have been taken for granted. I genuinely do. We have guys that have given a decade, some more. It may be their second or last time going to Croke Park. For them to have trained all year, given absolutely everything, and not be allowed into a venue is outrageous, really. And I suppose he's thinking of Seamus O'Shea, Tom Parsons, Colin Boyle, Keith Higgins, these fellas, Connor, and that if they don't make the 26, they're sitting at home. And really, like, I mean, that doesn't sit well with me, that so one of those four is going to be sitting at home with their family. How awkward is that? Like, I mean, after being there playing for so long and not being allowed in, and if we're back down to level 3, I think this is something the GAA should really, really be going to the government to say, Jesus, allow 10 more in an empty Hogan stand, you know, is not. And even if it's a situation where all 10 have to drive down separately, if it's a, you know, a health issue there, I'm sure they'd be more than willing to do that. But Jesus, allow them. And I think all managers are saying it now, almost in a man management kind of capacity, in that if John Kiely says it Liam Cahill said it, if James Horan doesn't come out and say it now, it's almost like he's forgetting about his 10, you know, or whoever is missing out as well. So they're all kind of coming out saying it almost to make sure that those 10 know that they're appreciated.
Yeah, and it's not just them, Willie, in fairness. Like Conor Sweeney said it on Sunday. I think everybody's been saying it, you know, any player you've been talking about, that it's not just about the players in the 26, especially this year. It's about the fellas that are training 2 and 3 times a week, and they're, you know, that are keeping the lads that are on the 26 up to scratch. And that it's a real shame. The one that hit home with me, because see, you mentioned a few names for Mayo there. Keith Higgins was actually on the panel for the Connacht final, but Colin Boyle was the one that hit home with me. Somebody who's given unbelievable service. And I was watching the game thinking, you know, in WhatsApp groups, texting people about the game. And I was like, is Colin Boyle doing the same thing? And like, how awkward it must have to be, like, if he's, you know, at home sitting with the family and thinking they know he should be there, he knows he should be there. And it just creates such a level of awkwardness, whatever. So, you know, Conor mentioned the crowds potentially coming back. Or, you know, they're looking into that, you know, when the level 5 restrictions are lifted. But the one thing that absolutely should be, the first thing, as you said there, should be that extended panel members, that they're the first people that are looked at. You know, it's not that much of a stretch to allow them, especially when you're going to Croke Park as well, which is such a spacious venue. I can't see any reason, and I really, really do hope, for the sake of all those Mayo lads and all the lads on all the panels that have been missing out so far, that they're going to get there for the semi-finals and beyond.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, there's even talk now for the All-Ireland finals, the hurling finals on December 13th. December 19th is the football. I don't know, lads. I've stopped following this COVID stuff a couple of months ago. I stopped watching the news and all that. So just from reading articles in relation to GAA, is it that we might be going to level 3 now at the start of December and then level 2 so we can all go mad at Christmas and then go back into a lockdown in January? Whatever it is. But anyway... The level 2 says that for every large purpose-built event, facilitate-specific guidance will be developed with relevant sectors to take account the size and different conditions for larger events. Anyways, I don't know why I read that out. It's a bit clunky. But anyways, under level 2, you're allowed some sort of crowds at matches. That's my understanding. And that's where we were back in September during the club. So maybe they will be allowed some sort of supporters in for the hurling final and the football final. She's even 3,000, Conan, to throw the little bit of... atmosphere into it.
Definitely. I find myself getting a bit jealous in the UK because they're talking about allowing 4,000 people into grounds from December 1st as well. Like, so that's something that they're looking at, especially with Premier League stadiums and stuff like that. Like, it would help. It would definitely help. And like the only problem, and I know they'll probably look at customizing it if they can, and the GA will work hard. But like on level two, it's 200 people are allowed there. That's where we were, as you said, in the summer, and it only ended up being what 100, 120 fans that were in the grounds. And then level one, I think it's 500. So if they can sort of work out some sort of special regulation with Croke Park, it's 80,000 seater stadium. So many exits and entrances. Like it could be. It could be worse, but then it's gone so far as well. See, just on the subs thing, isn't it mad though to think that all the issues in the GAA are generally around being worried about players leaving the game? Like, you know, we talk about Dublin being too good, or like a tier two and a tier one and whatever else. Like, it's and fixtures, it's always the concern that players won't bother playing. Why would they bother playing? Here you have 15, probably 20 people in some panels who are busting their balls, doing all the work, and they're just treated like shit at the end of it. They're sitting at home watching it. It's insane.
Yeah, no, like it definitely is. And hopefully, you'd be hopeful that they'll change that on Monday. And that's the GAA need to be proactive and start, you know, fighting. Well, I suppose it's not going, it changed for the football semi-finals. It's probably too late to change for the hurling semi-finals coming up this weekend. Final one, lads, before we go, and we didn't have time to talk about this on Monday because we didn't really cover the Meath Dublin game at all. Cormac Costello sending off. How bizarre was this sending off, lads? Like, I mean, it's very obvious that he was sent off for saying something to the official. But holy shit, what could he have said to get a straight red card here, Connor?
Not even sure. Like, I mean, like as far as I was aware, now I know they clarified the rules on RT immediately afterwards. But like I know in recent years,
what did they say? I might have missed that.
It's like I think it's as far as I know to threaten or to use abusive or provocative language to our gestures to an opponent and an official. There must be obviously varying degrees because like I know when the black card was introduced, like abusive language even towards. Yeah. A teammate, an opponent, or an official could be a black card offence. So, like, there's been. I was kind of just looking to see had there been any kind of elaboration on what might have happened. And I'm sure Dublin are trying to keep it under wraps. But it must have been quite serious. But at the same time, at the end of the game, Cormac Costello could be visibly seen to be not just going up to the ref. I think he went up to umpires. He went up to the line. Yeah. He went up to the referee beforehand. So in his head, he obviously thought that he did very little wrong. So, yeah. Like, I don't know. It'll obviously depend on the referee's report. If the referee said that, you know, he used abusive language and that would merit a red card, well, then I don't see that he has the case to make, to be honest.
I don't know what way to look at this. Like, what could have been said? I do agree. Costello looks so surprised. It would make you think, you know, that what he said, like, he's saying, ah, for fuck's sake. You know, is that abusive language? Yeah. Or is you're a effing bollock? You know, who knows what he said? Whatever it is, I don't know. The linesman needs to just go, I would be more on Costello. I'd hate to see somebody sent off for just a flashpoint because it was almost like he was running past the linesman. You know what I mean? How would he have said it that quickly and, you know, aggressively? It was, to me, it seemed like he ran past him really quickly and it must have been said in a flash. And of course, the linesman, I've never seen that happen before, Conan.
I'm baffled. I watched it back a few times. I don't want to condone, like, you know, don't say anything to a linesman and a referee and you're fine, right? Grand. But it happens when you're playing competitive sport. It was getting roughed up. He lost the line ball. Like, maybe the camera didn't pick it all up, but it just looked to me that he said, fuck off. And he wasn't even that close to the linesman. He was looking away, coming back onto the pitch, thinking, for God's sake, it's not my ball. I said, fuck off.
Yeah, if that's what I saw as well, if that's what he said, that's incredibly harsh now. And that linesman needs to, I don't know, what do you say? He needs to man up a little bit there.
No, I think he just needs to, like, again, Conor Costello, don't do it. I have to qualify that. But the linesman, just needs to ignore it. Like, you know, he probably heard way worse. Like, just, you know, he's frustrated. He's playing a Leinster final. He's trying to get onto the Dublin team. He's annoyed the decision hasn't gone his way. It looked to me, and like, I'm not a great lip reader, but that's like, it seemed to use two syllables. Like, it didn't turn around, square up to the linesman. He didn't seem to call him anything personally. It was just such an unnecessary decision by the looks of things.
And if it was that F off, like, I mean, that can be more at the situation. Yeah. You know, that's not a personal insult at the linesman. You know what I mean? That's almost like venting.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I take a bad shot, which is most of the time in the game, I'd say fuck off myself. But like, I would think that if the linesman saw fit to give that advice to the referee, that he thought he was being personally insulted. Because you're right. Like, again, qualify, you know, the situation here that he shouldn't be doing it anyway. but you'd like to think that if the linesman had realized that he just said that to himself or in general, as opposed to saying, F off you, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there is, I know, you know, we're getting into semantics here, but there is a difference between the two. And I'd imagine that it'll all come out in the referee's report and that Cormac Costello might indeed get off. But until then, we can only really speculate, to be honest. But from what we've seen so far, it didn't look that bad.
No. And if anybody can get off, it'll be Cormac. He'll just say, Daddy, will you pull a few strings there? And maybe that linesman will never be seen in Croke Park ever again, Conan. Like, who knows what's going to happen here? He doesn't know who he's after been messing with.
Yeah. What happened to the linesman? He went away. Like a mafia job or something.
No, he's under the witness protection program or something like that. We're only talking nonsense, lads, now. We may leave a go here. We'll be back with Killian Clark. Happiness hit her like a train on a
track. I don't really know. John Mooney Moore, me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run for your children, for your sisters and brothers. Leave all your loving behind, you can't.
All right, so we wanted to get some reaction from everyone's second favourite team. We didn't have time on Monday. I'm delighted to say Killian Clark joins us on the line now. How's it going, Killian?
Not too bad, Colin. Not too bad now. Yeah, just getting back to back and I'm madly after a few days, you know.
Yeah, I'd say you're a happy man and I'd say you're also a very relieved man because you could have been watching that match on the television like me.
Yeah, it was a good decision kind of late in the year, you know, after the club championship to, you know, get in touch with Mickey and put my name forward to see if he'd take me back in, you know, and lucky enough, I got the green light from him, you know.
Right. Okay. So, like, I mean, how did the conversation go with him? Because you had, how long had you been, you'd been pretty much out of intercounty football, close on a year at that stage then?
Yeah. You know, like, I was back with the club. I was my captain of the club team and, you know, I picked up a bit of a knock probably earlier in the year. A few bits and pieces just wanted to get cleared up. So I decided to step away and just, you know, relax a wee bit, you know, but you know, played a bit of club championship, you know, obviously with the restrictions and COVID and everything, you know, there wasn't a lot happening at home, you know, there was no holidays, there was no going anywhere, anything like that. But you know, I probably didn't have the best club championship I've ever had, you know, and Mickey kind of highlighted that on the original phone call and, you know, just made me aware that there'd be a lot of work for myself to get myself back into a bit of shape. And you know, thankfully I was able to get myself into a bit of shape and put myself in contention then, you know.
Yeah, so you got your first start then in the last league game against Roscommon. Not the greatest performance in the world for Cavan and you ended up being relegated.
Yeah, it was disappointing from that point of view, you know, like I'd say a month ago if you asked the Cavan fans, you know, well, probably outside of Cavan there was a few Cavan faithful, obviously they would have stuck with you, but a lot of people would have been saying that you would have struggled throughout the Ulster Championship on the back of that, you know, and Monaghan, you know, who were a seasoned team, you know, had got the better of us, you know, in years gone by, maybe not last year, obviously. But, you know, it was a bit doom and gloom all the same.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I suppose even starting that game, nobody really gave you a chance, you know, against Monaghan, obviously, because you had a very strong team out against Roscommon that day. And you and they only had half a team because of COVID issues. And then you come out in the first half against Monaghan and you could have conceded 4 or 5 goals. And then some sort of a light switches on. I don't know, was something said at halftime or what changed at that point?
Yeah, you know, it's a difficult one to walk out, you know, like I think in the majority of the first halves that we've played, you know, we probably had scoring chances ourselves that we didn't take, you know, when we were coughing the ball up very cheaply and we were kind of caught out of position from a defensive point of view, and that was giving teams opportunities to run at you man on man, you know, and they were getting opportunities that weren't taking every one of them, which was lucky enough for us, but we, you know, we really assessed it at halftime in the majority of games, you know, nice, calm and collective and you know, fixed the issues that we were having. And, you know, we had a few big players that stood up too, which helped the cause.
Yeah. Is Mickey good at that, fixing issues within a game?
Oh, definitely. You know, himself, Dermot and Martin Corey there, you know, between the three of them, you know, Dermot just like to throw a few stats at us. He's very much involved in the stats side of things, but he definitely has an influence on the way we approach games and what way we can kind of make those adjustments and obviously relay that message to Mickey and between the three of them, they kind of come up with the plan and relay it back to players then, you know.
Right, okay, because like, I mean, in that Monaghan game, I remember us trying to do some analysis on that on the Monday, and we were saying, geez, you actually played very offensively against the wind and then played defensively with the wind. I said, I don't know whether to give Mickey Graham credit for this win or whether to go this, you know, like, this is crazy. And then, like, against Down, I suppose it was a similar situation, terrible in the first half and then brilliant in the second half. I don't know, I think that's why everybody, all your games have been televised and you've been, I don't know, you've shown that you're human and then that you're able to kind of show massive character to get back into games.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think, you know, us as a football team, you know, the last number of years, we've been doing a lot of things right, you know. Like, we've ticked a lot of boxes that a lot of the best teams in the country would have ticked, but we just haven't probably putting up in the scoreboard and creating those chances, those goal-scoring opportunities and those shots from the right positions as well. You know, and that's definitely something we've corrected in the last number of months and worked on last year as well, I believe.
Yeah, and like, I mean, the belief definitely is tested this year, considering, like, I mean, you were one of eight players that walked away this year, you know, like, I mean, and you came back, but the other seven didn't. Like, you're not even playing with your full deck this year.
Yeah, you know, like, it probably just gives all the lads opportunities as well, you know. Like, there's probably, as much as any county team, you know, there's probably better players sitting at home somewhere, you know, that just have different things going on in their life that they can't just make that commitment that's needed for county football, you know. But the players that we have give it their all. You know, they've worked hard throughout the year, and you know, we've kind of reaped the rewards of it now. You know, from a fitness perspective, you know, a lot of teams are probably looking at us if we're that good in the second half. You know, is there an element that we're fitter than most? You know, there's loads of questions you get asked there from that perspective.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I'd say Donegal game then was the best performance of the year by far, because he started the game brilliantly. There was no issues with that, and you pretty much dominated that game outside of probably a purple patch for Donegal around the middle of the first half.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, like, in the first 10 or 15 minutes, we were definitely on top and we were taking a scoring chances and we weren't coughing the ball up, you know. And Killian the Gunner, who, you know, he's no saint at the best of times, you know, but I thought he probably got a bit of raw treatment there for the black card they did pick up, you know. So yeah, we went down to 14 and we struggled to kind of, you know, put the ball through the hands, and they were turning us over and doing exactly what Down done. It got us on the break and attacked us and we were chipping away at the points from a perspective. I think did seven scores within that 10-minute period, give or take. Yeah, you know, we reassessed it at halftime and made the changes, and it worked out well in the end.
Yeah, it definitely did. Like, I mean, can you explain to me how the game has kind of changed from a tactical point of view now, even with Cavan and Donegal? Is it that, you know, the game, bodies are still going behind the ball, but the games are more exciting? It's because the attacking team pushes everybody up on the opposition's team, and it's like almost 15 or 14 on 14 and a half. So every man has a man still, so it doesn't look like it's really defensive. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, there's probably an argument there. You know, it's probably a bit more man for man than it has been, I think, for a lot of teams now. You know, I think Dublin obviously are the kingpins and the benchmark for a lot of teams on how to perform, and, you know, a good measuring tool for yourself. So, you know, pushing up, getting those turnovers higher up the field, you know, has worked a treat for us, and it's something we've definitely been working on over the last 2 years anyway. You know, try and get those turnovers, and it'll, a team doesn't get a chance to get set up and they're running back to their own goals defending instead of, you know, rushing out to you, which typically is what you would have seen over the last number of years, I would have said.
Yeah, no, like, obviously pressing up on kickouts and stuff like that, you know, maybe during the game as a team might drop off you, you know, naturally as it happens. Yourselves and Donegal seem very comfortable in maybe slowing down some attacks and just letting that happen and going, right, there's no point in rushing this.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like, we have some great fielders of balls at the minute too, playing with Cavan. You know, your James Smith, your Grode McKiernan, your Thomas Galligan. You know, there's probably not a lot of lads in the country, you know, that would be put into that bracket, I would say, anyway. You know, so we have that option to go long if need be with lads are catching clean, and it gives you an opportunity to attack straight away before anything gets set up. And obviously, we like most teams, we have the short kick out in the locker as well if needed, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Come here, there was a huge outpouring of emotion amongst the players. Like, I mean, you were just going around each other, you know, just holding each other's faces and like almost, you know, massive kind of outpouring of emotion. Mickey Graham couldn't kind of speak with it in his BBC interview. Like, I mean, I was saying on the show on Monday, it was just like, you know, years and years of maybe not building on your underage success and frustration amongst all of you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like there was a few lads, there was a few tears, there was a few... good bit of roaring and shouting done, and a lot of lads, you know, very happy with the result, you know, which it's been building for a number of years, and especially the nature of the loss against Donegal last year. Probably, you know, we scored two goals in the last 10 minutes to take a bit of gloss of it, probably from a Donegal perspective.
Yeah.
But they were fairly dominant throughout that game, and especially in the first half, you know, they really put us to the wire. But we probably felt, and after that then too, been bet by Tyrone, you know, you probably felt that you were probably further away than you wanted to be and where you believed you were coming into that season, you know. So it was great to, you know, that finally get that realisation of, you know, you're mixing with the best, and you've got that, you know, covered off of an Ulster Championship that every man's been dreaming about, you know, for as long as I've been involved with Cavan and before even, you know.
Yeah. You were aware that Tipperary had beaten Cork, were you? Like, I mean, did that give you a little lift? I thought I read that somewhere.
Yeah, I personally wasn't. I think a few of the players might have been... I don't know, it wouldn't have made any difference to me anyway from that perspective. I was kind of trying to stay focused on the game, and, you know, wouldn't have been the biggest shock anyway, because even Cavan and Tipperary have rubbed shoulders a good number of times, and I know a lot of the Tipperary boys personally as well, and the great footballers that they are, you know, and obviously I knew it was going to be a battle, so it wouldn't have been just a massive shock all the same from my perspective, I wouldn't have said.
No, probably not. But were you aware that you were the last team, you know, of the four provincial winners in 1920, you know, where was this kind of thing going through your head? I didn't know about that until the Monday.
I heard it talked about, you know, the night before and bits and pieces like that, but it wasn't something that was going through my head during the game, no, I'm not kind of late, you know. I was kind of focusing in on my job and not worrying about all the noise all the same, you know.
Maybe not. Come here, how have the celebrations been like? Like, we all saw them on the field, and that looked normal enough. Obviously, there was no invasion. I remember in 1997 when Cavan won it, there was a pitch invasion, absolutely mental stuff. So you were missing that. But it's very, very unusual under level 5 restrictions, I suppose, when you went off the field.
Oh, definitely. You know, like, you're going into an empty-ish dressing room compared to what you usually see on Championship final day. And obviously on the field after the game, you know, you didn't have the lorry of people kind of rushing on. You know, my probably father and my grandmother and my mother and my brother and all would have been the first on to every Ulster Championship game we would have played when we won in any finals that with the underage setups that we had, which was a bit weird not to be able to talk to them straight away, you know. So we're going in, you know, you're looking for the phones to get the video calls going on the pitch and try and share that memory with them as much as you can, you know.
Really? Were you doing that? You were doing Skype calls from the pitch?
Yeah, I rang a few people after. Just we had and it might have been seven, but at that stage, you know, we were sharing that. But just give a few boys calls. Darren McVitie as well. Give him a quick call as well. You know,
right.
Touch base.
Yeah, in a weird way, it's kind of like the All Ireland final in Croke Park now, that there isn't pitch invasions anymore. You could probably enjoy it with your teammates first, at least. Whereas the pitch invasion, it would be complete, you know, chaos.
Yeah, no, 100%. I wouldn't say there would have been a few older men in Cavan now coming on with tears in their eyes if they were there in Armagh the last day. There was a few of them down in Breffni Park after. There was a chap called Kevin McGee from Shercock, you know, and I think he was called the Breffni after, but he was holding up the traffic for 5 minutes. He was looking for the Killian the Gunner. I think he wanted to nap them after the game, so he did.
Come here, what was I going to say? So, like, I mean, you left the dressing room then. You went back to, was it Kingspan Breffni Park, and had a went on the back of a lorry or whatever and had a drive-through kind of celebrations or homecoming.
Yeah, exactly. So we come back through obviously Monaghan Town when you're coming from Armagh and through Smithsboro, and, you know, there's bonfires and flags and, you know, probably people coming over from Cotill or the Monaghan side of Cavan, if you want to say, and meeting us along the road. And people, you know, droves of people kind of out in their numbers, probably just families kind of sticking together more so than anything else. Yeah. And then in through Butler's Bridge and the streets mobbed in Butler's Bridge a wee bit. And then, you know, we kind of convoyed into Breffni Park. Then we lifted the cup with the squad at about 9 o'clock. You know, there's, you know, 40 odd members of the extended panel, obviously, that couldn't have been there. in Armagh due to the restrictions, which is highly disappointing from a player's perspective. But you know, we said I think the plan was to wait to lift the cup until we got to Breffni, but you know, those plans were changed just by officials in Armagh after the game. But every man got to lift the cup. Every man got to, you know, share that moment with the family. Only family members were allowed into the grounds itself. Close family members, you know, 3 or 4 people per family. I think Killian the Gunner might have had maybe 20 people because he's that many relations in his family too. So there was a few more on his side of things. But everyone got to lift the cup and share a few moments with the family and a few pictures and that in Breffni Park. And then we got up onto a lorry and there was a drive-through done. So we were on the back of the lorry for about 3 hours after that. I think we finished up at 12 o'clock.
That's absolutely incredible. Like, what bizarre scenes in 2020 to be on the back of a lorry as cars drive past, they give you a beep. I'm sure they shout out stuff at you as well. Like, I mean, I'd say that's incredibly enjoyable, even though hugely different.
No, definitely. You know, it's something that you wouldn't have pictured in your head now, definitely. You know, people coming through with the flags and banners and, you know, I think there was a flare in one of the cars at one stage too, out the back, a blue flare, which is great to see, you know. But it was great to share that moment, especially with the underage of Cavan as well. You know, hopefully you can inspire them to drive on and develop into the footballers that we will need over the next few years, you know. Obviously, 97 was the last time we won, so I wasn't involved. I wasn't old enough to remember those days, but there's definitely a lot of players that came through the Cavan ranks that were inspired by your Dermot McCabe's, you know, your Stephen King's, your Mickey Graham's, your Peter Riley's, your Larry Riley's, your J.O.'s, you know, that kind of way. So
yeah, well,
give an element to that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you won a minor Ulster in 2011. You won 3 of the 4 Ulster titles. Like, that's 2011. That's 14, 15, 16 years. What is it? It's 14 years after 1997. There is no doubt that inspired a lot of to be playing the game.
Yeah, I know, 100%. Like, you can see young lads coming through now, like 18, 19 years of age, Keevan McGovern, Keane Riley, Oisin Brady, the likes of that, you know. So probably, there's probably a photo or two with a few of the lads there, with a few of the players, current panel members, you know, a few of the older lads in the team, your Martin Riley's, your Garodes and that, you know. So it obviously inspired a few of those to push on and really develop into the footballers that's needed, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. So it's Dublin now, Killian. And, like, I mean, you have the 2 weeks to relax. And, geez, I'm sure your bodies are sore. And, you know, any of the knocks that you've been picking up, you know, will be back to normal. I saw Mickey Graham talking about a neutral venue for this game. What's your thoughts on that, or what are the players' thoughts on it?
I haven't really been talking to too many Dubais about it. You know, it's kind of come up in the media probably the last day or two. You know, Mickey has had a say in it, you know, from my perspective, like, I'm not really too bothered with it either way, you know. I'd just like to get on with the game and, you know, wherever it is at this stage, you know, that kind of way. I know there's arguments there that you bring Dublin at a croaker and, you know, they're a dominant team this last 5-6 years or whatever it might be. But, I'll not get too upset anyway if it isn't croaker. We'll just have to get on with it, you know.
No, like, I mean, complaining about playing in Croker is a new one. There's no doubt about that. But from my point of view, the big advantage of playing Dublin in Croke Park, the big advantage for them is the crowd and Hill 16, you know, and having maybe 60,000 Dublin fans in there and maybe only 20,000 Cavan fans. Like, I mean, this, it's a level playing field in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. It's probably not the time of the year to be looking to make them changes either, you know. Like, if people have an argument there that, you know, there is, you know, an obvious advantage, you know, that should be trashed out of Congress and the powers to be debated and, you know, come up with a solution. But, you know, 2 weeks for the game is probably a difficult enough one to change at this stage. But, you know, we'll just have to get on with it anyway. Just have to roll with the punches and react positively, whatever the situation is, all the same.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, from your point of view as a player, I don't know about me, but, like, I mean, an All-Ireland semi-final, I don't know, it just feels strange not being in Croke Park. I don't know, but I completely understand. Like, I've been talking about Dublin having an unfair advantage playing all their games in Croke Park. But the argument for me is they should be taking their league games out and taking all those extra games out. But an All-Ireland semi-final is a Croke Park kind of fixture. It always has been.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, and if the fans were there, you know, I think a lot of the lads would be in agreement that, you know, it's not even up for debate that, you know, you can run out with 80,000 people roaring and shouting at you. That's a feeling that you don't probably have too often, and a lot of players mightn't have had that came through the ranks. You know, it's definitely something you'd like to experience. But, you know, I don't have really any strong views on the topic. You're not going to, like, just kind of just get on with it more so than anything else.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, I mean, this the show's going out tomorrow on Thursday. So, I presume you're back training, or have you been back training already, or when do you kind of get the show back on the road?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we got a bit done last night, so we did. You know, just off the cobwebs, a bits and pieces like that, and just get the head screw back on and try and start, sit down and analyze what Dublin are going to bring and what we can do to kind of, you know, affect that train that is Dublin. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think you're Dublin are 1-100, but I suppose considering the year Cavan had, people might be a little bit mad to be backing against Cavan in any game from now on. Come here, Killian. Thanks very much for taking the call. I really appreciate it, and best of luck against Dublin.
No hassle at all, Colin. 100%.
All right, great stuff from Killian there. We'll be back next Thursday, where we'll preview the two big ones, the two All-Ireland semi-finals. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
Finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.